This is a story about what happens when you have breast cancer, told in real time. If you're just joining us and haven't listened to our previous episodes, about a year and a half ago, we started chronicling Kristen's life as she lived with breast cancer. And today she's on the other end, but as we've learned, there is really no end. So 3 years ago, I think I just saw your moving post on Facebook, Kristen, right?
Mm-hmm.
3 years ago, Kristen, from Austin to San Diego. And that was to be near family and start over. And it was just a few months later that this whole story started, when she had that terrifying moment in the shower that we all hope we never have. So we talked on our most recent episode the night before your final surgery, and that was your third reconstructive surgery.
Right.
And then we actually talked the day after that surgery, and I wanted to start by asking you why you decided you wanted to re-record your post-op and not actually release that conversation, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to back up for just a second on that 3 years. It's actually 2.5 I got out here for good. And 3 years ago, I came out here to go to rehab. And I didn't say that directly in the post on Facebook, but yeah, it's the 3-year anniversary of my sobriety and the beginning of my journey back to being healthy. And I didn't think I was going to get emotional about it, but this is the first time I'm actually reflecting on where I was then. And I was much closer to death back then than I think I ever was with cancer, which is saying a lot, because I was in such a state of desperation and emotional and mental, spiritual pain. It's interesting that I've just gone through all of this and I am so much healthier than I was 3 years ago. Sorry. That was the best decision of my life. And it's not that I have any judgment for people who are not sober. I didn't realize that I had an alcohol issue. Like, I knew I had mental health issues and I knew I had trauma issues. And what came up is that I was numbing all of those things with alcohol because I couldn't get the pain to go away any other way. And so I had no idea how healthy I could be in other ways than physically. And I'm so grateful. And if I didn't have those tools that I learned before I got cancer, there's no way you and I could have had these conversations.
That's right.
So anyway, why did I decide to to re-record? Very long way around it. Well, so I think it was like a day or two afterward, and I was in a lot of pain. And I just didn't feel like we were doing the podcast, but I was doing it, I don't want to say rushed, but half-assed, not purposely, but just because I was in pain. And I also didn't feel like that gave a good end to my story, a full end to my story. Not that it has to be a big, robust, ta-da-da-da, you know, or anything like that, but I just felt like we had a little bit more to say about it. It's not about Dr. Pacella, but I also felt like that wasn't giving him the credit that he deserved for like finishing the job, because I wasn't really able to comprehend all that had been done.
So today, how many days ago was your final surgery?
22. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was 3 weeks yesterday.
Has anything been different about this recovery than the previous two?
I am so much more impatient.
Impatient?
Impatient. I am not giving
myself back to normal. Like,
well, yeah. I'm not giving myself the grace that I should. I still cannot pick up more than a milk jug until the 6-week mark.
Yeah, that's annoying.
Totally annoying. And yeah, I think that the main thing is that I'm more impatient, and also this binders that I'm wearing are much more confining. So it feels just, everything just feels tighter and isn't as comfortable. I have to think more about what I'm wearing. I've been going to a sports physical therapist because I'm such an athlete right now. See me. And he's been taping my feet with that athletic tape stuff, you know, which is amazing. But it goes all the way up to the middle of my calf in the back.
But can you believe that a roll of tape is the thing that's still, how many decades have we been using athletic tape to solve these problems? It's just really fantastic.
It is. And so I'm pretty taped up. Like it goes from the ball of my foot all the way up to the middle of my calf. And then it's wrapped not around, but up around my ankles and like other places. And so I was with some friends on Sunday and I had a dress on that was like a little bit more on my knee. And I don't want the tape to come off the bottom. So, you know, it suggested that I wear socks, right? Because if you wear flip-flops, it's going to come off. Okay. So I found a pair of my Pilates socks that have the toes cut out that are like flesh colored. So I had those on. I had a white dress and I had those on and I had my flip-flops with my new arches in them that my friend Rafaela, she looks at me and she's always the one. Like I hadn't seen her in a while. She goes, let me look down your shirt. I want to see those boobs. and she goes, what's up with your feet? What are you doing there, Kristen? And like, I just have to say, because the whole thing is just.
It could always be worse. You know, I'm thinking of my friend who had endometrial cancer. And so she had lymph nodes removed in her groin and has lymphedema in her leg, one leg.
Oh.
And so that leg is like twice the size of the other leg. And it has been for 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
And so she told me recently she can never wear a dress again. She wears long flowy pants all the time. She wears a compression stocking every day. It's like, it's the same kind of indignity that you go through with your feet.
Yeah.
And I think that none of us really realize, unless we're aware of it, how much of a burden it is on your life to do something like spend 45 minutes a day putting a compression stocking on and off.
Right.
And that the stocking costs $500 for one of them.
Oh my gosh.
And she will have to do this for the rest of her life. And it, to me, seems completely unacceptable. And if you ask her, she says, it might have been better to not even do it. It might have been better to take my chances and die.
I mean, yeah. I'm going to say something here that I don't think I was ever going to say out loud. I've told two people this in the moments of desperation in order for me to not do something. There was a time, probably about a month ago, that I was in so much pain. And I had to go to the place in getting my head straight and my heart straight of actually visualizing what would happen if I didn't make it. Right. And I think I've lived a good life. Like, what would you do differently? If you were gone, do you feel like you lived a good life? And did you leave most people better than you found them? And I had to go, yeah, I have. There are some things I still want to do. I want to see how my son turns out. And I want to love the people who love me. And I don't want them to be sad. But I lived a good life. And I had to change my view on death. Right? And so about a month ago, with all of the pain and the uncertainty, I had a conversation with my sponsor mentor, and I just said, you know what? I've lived a really good life. What's the point? I'm like really okay if I'm not here anymore. And if this is what my life is always going to look like, I'm out.
I think you're talking about the foot pain. Talking about recovery from surgery pain.
Oh, no, I hadn't had surgery yet.
Right. You're talking about the residual pain caused by the chemo and the radiation and
the hormone blockers.
And the hormone blockers. The pain from the treatment.
And the pain from the treatment, also the swelling from the treatment, all the things that I do every day to move through my day. And I've changed my eating. I'm much healthier. That's great. It's that I have to think about every damn thing I do. Everything I put in my mouth, every step I take, everything. Like, I don't get to just like get up and go, woohoo, I'm just going to go play pickleball today. I'm going to go run. You know, I have to think, okay, are the right arches in the right shoes that I want to wear? Have I done what I need to do to be able to keep moving in an hour? And it sounds dramatic. And if you see me, you'd be like, you look all right. But I spent the day with a friend of mine who I hadn't seen in a year. And I saw him right after my mastectomy, before radiation. And he said, I'm glad you warned me about your feet, because I was shocked at how much more slowly you're moving.
Yeah.
And how much more deliberately you're moving. And I mean, I'm alive. Yeah. You know, and I have so many things to be grateful for. Like, I don't think we've had a lot of episodes about my gratitude. I think it's been about my complaining. recently, because I went back and I listened to a couple of episodes in the beginning to see the difference. Like, this is right around when I had my chemoversary and mastectomyversary, to just kind of see how my perspective changed. And I was just like, I'm so grateful, you know, that I see a road. I'm going to be fine. And, you know, I'll
cute little before Kristen.
Oh, she's Jesus. So isn't she annoying? I had to do that to get through every day. So I'm talking about the pain, and I'm talking about what you're talking about with your friend, like what you have to do to be able to move through your life. And it was a state of mind for a couple of days, because I was just like, everything's a fucking uphill climb right now. And then I'm like, really? Because it was an uphill climb in January of 2021, when you had everything still to go to treat this tumor. So really, is this an uphill climb? Or is this just like, suck it up and get used to it? And the sports therapist, it's so interesting, because he says, he's like, it's hard for me to figure out if this is something structural I can help you fix, or if it's a co-occurring. And I'm like, it's definitely co-occurring, but what we're doing is giving me a lot of relief. It's not as painful all the time.
You're seeing progress then?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's taking a lot of time, isn't it?
It is. I see him 2 hours a week.
And then what do you do every day?
Oh, every day I do a series of stretches 4 times a day. I do a series of stretches before I get out of bed. So when I get my feet on the ground, it's okay. I have a foot massager thing that I'm on 3 times a day for probably 30 minutes. There's some icing that I do.
Sounds like a full-time job.
I'm wondering how I'm going to go back to work next week.
Job starts before you get out of bed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I went to a place, it's called the Good Feet Store, and paid a small fortune for a series of arches. And they're arches that you put in, they're different ones based on what you're going to do. Like if you're just walking, or if you're hiking, or if you're running, or I mean, like doing extended running.
How's your running going?
It's, oh my gosh. I have a 42-minute mile. Top that, bitches. But I have, what's really cool is that I have some arches that are to help wake your feet up and to help ramp up and calm down. I put those on first thing and then last thing. I don't have to do my hair right now, because I just kind of put my hand through it, because there's not a lot to it. And so I just kind of justify it as the time that I would be spending on my hair and getting ready.
You just do your feet.
I just do my feet and legs. Well, and the thing is, it's all the way up to my knees, like the work that we're doing, because everything's so tight. And I have, it's a joke that I have with my friends, but it's really kind of true. I was going somewhere with a friend, and I'm like, dude, the bar is low. if I get up, take a shower, do my skincare routine, put my hands through my hair, get dressed, put a lot of deodorant on, and get all of the things I need to do for my feet ready, I'm done. Like, you might get some lipstick or some lip gloss one day. I haven't gotten ready for things. And I think that part of it is that it's just like, I am who I am. You guys, I've been through hell. Just accept it. Okay. Look at me. But I'm looking forward to the day. I've actually asked my sister, who does hair and makeup and stuff. I've just said, can I come over? I said, I feel really frumpy and I don't feel like I have any direction on how to make myself look better anymore.
I think you need some blonde highlights, to be honest.
Do it? Okay.
I do.
Maybe I'll do that.
When I look at pictures of you with blonde hair, I think that's what you really look like. And right now, I think this is not what you really look like. It's so dark.
It's so dark. So dark. Yeah, I don't remember it. It wasn't this dark when I was getting highlights. Oh, I actually shook my head the other day and my hair moved. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Because it hasn't done that in a long time. I totally went off from where, I don't remember what your question was.
Well, my next question is, considering how many people there are in the world with chronic illness, what advice would you give to somebody who cares about someone with chronic illness, especially if that person is single and lives alone?
I don't feel like I'm an expert yet, but I feel like just understand and give them grace and give them time. And also treat them like a normal person while being sensitive. Yesterday, I went to a restaurant where there were stairs and there was an elevator. And my friend was like, can you do the stairs? And I was like, I can try. And he's like, oh, elevator. Oh, what kind of idiot am I? And the thing was, for me to say, I'll try, I kind of always want to know if it's better than the last time I tried. Don't pity them. Treat them like a normal person, but with compassion and grace. And that's like so intangible. But know that they didn't want this. And that they're internally fighting with themselves every day. Also, something as small as when someone gets in the car, offering the seatbelt to them so that I don't have to reach around and grab it. Because of my range of motion. And so it's just little kindnesses. And I know it's not possible for somebody to really have empathy because hopefully not most people haven't been through it, but to just have sympathy for what they're going through. And if they want to talk about it, let them talk. But the other thing too is that one reason I didn't talk to a lot of people for a while during all my treatments and stuff was because when people would ask me how I'm feeling, I want to say I'm feeling better. But the truth was I wasn't. And that just makes everybody uncomfortable. It's a fine line between saying, how are you feeling? Or are you feeling better? To being supportive and saying like, well, you're moving through that better than I thought you would. Or, you know, something like, I don't know. I mean,
it kind of brings me back to the things not to say conversation that we were having a while ago, like, you know, what not to say to your friend who's got breast cancer or whatever they have. Mm-hmm. I think it's better to do something than to say something. So whatever that looks like, if you can figure out how to help the person by doing something that might be challenging, even in just an everyday, ordinary thing, just lightening that load. Every chance you can get.
That's it.
Yeah.
A friend of mine came over and was like, can I just put some laundry in for you? I was like, sure.
I'd take that.
Right. And that saves me from walking out there.
But you can't lift right now.
No.
So a laundry basket full of laundry is heavy.
Oh, no. I take.
We have a wheelie. You got a wagon for your laundry.
No, I just take it. I put some in my hands and I'm like,
one
yeah.
piece of clothing down there at a time.
No. I'm like, does this weigh like a milk jug? Okay. I can do 3 pair of pants, 2 bras, a few shirts. But I think also just checking in and letting them know and just doing small things that take a little bit of the burden off, offering rides.
I have to ask, speaking of rides.
Yeah.
How goes the handicapped placard?
Mm.
Is your life completely different now that you have it?
Kinda. So, okay. So yesterday, you know, my friend insisted on paying for lunch and we parked in the handicap, right? And it was a paid parking area. And I said, well, okay, I paid for parking.
Just play that card.
Yeah. It is helping quite a bit. I'll be honest.
It's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear it.
Thank you. I'm going back to work next week.
Yeah.
This is going to be different from the previous surgery in that I was off for a full 6 weeks and I will have been off for almost four post-surgery, right?
So there will still be a couple of weeks where you can't lift much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect that you'll be able to much after, you know, it's not like an alarm goes off and all of a sudden.
I know. Well, I'm working my way up to it. Like, I think I'm doing a little more than a milk jug, you know, here and there, but I mean, it's things like lifting Sammy up into his car seat.
Right.
I mean, he's 2.5. He's really good at understanding. Like last time when I would visit, I would come over and visit before I came back to work and he'd want me to hold him. And I'd say, Kristen has a boo-boo. And I would pat my chest and I'd say, I can't lift Sammy right now. And so his way of asking if I was able to lift him is that Kristen's boo-boo is better. And that meant that I could lift him. So I miss him. It's going to be a month between the time that I've seen him. And I FaceTimed him once and sent him videos and stuff. But
have like 1,000 more words by the time he gets
back. I know.
He's going to be so grown up.
I know, my little guy. So Crystal's great. I mean, Crystal and Eric will totally manage everything for me. I went back 3 weeks after my mastectomy as far as like helping care for him. But they lifted him in and out of his crib and all that kind of stuff. And his crib is open now. So he crawls in there on his own and all of that. But who doesn't want to pick up a 2-year-old? And so I have to say something that has been really positive, and a lot of things have been really positive, but my cognition has gotten so much better, Eva.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's time, you know, I've given it time from the chemo brain, but I've also been for 2 months in my coffee in the morning. It's called Mudwater. This isn't an ad for Mudwater. They're not sponsoring us, but it has, it has lion's mane mushroom in it. And the reason it appealed to me, it was the lion's mane and the turmeric. The turmeric is supposed to be really good for your joints. And I can say my joints are better.
Their website is like directed at Navy SEALs and athletes.
Yeah. Well, hi, I just talked about it. 42 minute mile.
Next thing I know, you'll be over in Coronado hanging out on the beach with the SEALs.
I know, right? I put that in my coffee and then I have one of those like pout, like hand whiskers. And then I mix it up and then I put like this much steamed milk in it and a little bit of sugar. I don't know if that had anything to do with my cognition, but I have felt, even with the pain, I have felt a little bit more on my game.
So this might be the end of season one, but really it's never the end of Kristen's story. And so you can expect us to be back with more updates and more resources in the future. We want to thank you for listening. A lot of you have told us that you've been with us since the beginning. I know I speak for both of us when I say we appreciate every single message that we've received and all the stories that have been shared with us, and that those have really kept us going through this podcast, which is a lot of work. And I don't bring it up very much, but we try to hold a really high standard for our production. If you listen to other podcasts, you can very quickly hear that they don't have the talented and amazing editor that we do. So we want to say thank you to Daniel for his exceptional talent, and our story editor, Mary Ellen, who makes sure that we're telling everything in the right order and that we're not beating dead horses with certain things. And so it's a team. And for us to keep telling this story and tell others' story in the future, we do need help. And we're really at a crossroads with the show. All podcasts require many more resources than you can see on the surface. And we have such a great team. And there's costs, of course, and it takes a lot of time. So,
yeah, I hope that we can keep doing it because I know it is helping a lot of people. And I keep getting notes.
If you are part of an organization or a business that would be a good fit for our audience as a sponsor, just please reach out to us on our website and send us a message. And you can find that at breastcancerstoriespodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Breast Cancer Stories. For us to continue telling this story and helping others, we need your help. All podcasts require resources. We have a team of people who produce it. There are costs involved and it takes time.
So if you believe in what we're doing and you have the means to support the show, you can make a one-time donation or you can set up a recurring donation in any amount through the PayPal link on our website at breastcancerstoriespodcast.com/donate.
And if you're part of an organization or a business that would be a good fit for our audience as a sponsor, reach out to us on our website at breastcancerstoriespodcast.com and send us a message. We'd love to hear from you.